Did you enjoy Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire but thought, man, that would be awesome with spaceships? Then you should pre-order Amanda Baldwin's book, The Traveler's Cup, on Inkshares. Do it before March 15th and be part of her winning the Nerdist Space Opera Contest. Help make a great writer's dream come true while getting a fantastic book published and acquiring a copy for yourself. Just look on the Nerdist Space Opera Contest under contests at Inkshares.com and click on Traveler's Cup. The following is a production of Galactic Netcasts.
Attention! The Sci-Fi Geeks Club is next! Please, stand by.
Live streaming provided by Alpha Geek Radio and Alpha Geek Video. Visit tunein.alphageekradio.com to learn more.
Hear ye! Another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is officially called to order!
I see that you've been given the proper secret knock and password, so you may enter the clubhouse. I'm President Dave Nelson, and here for this meeting this week is Brad Ludwig. Hello, Brad.
Hello.
Our guest member this week is the founder and creator of Big Old Box of Stuff. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Robert Rice. Hey, Rob.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. All right, let's get into the, let's start the show with the news. Here we go.
Headline news of vital, significant events from every corner of the earth. Spoken news brought into your home, your office, even into your car as you speed along the highway.
This is the news. Here are the headlines.
All right, here we go. Three big stories this week from the world of sci-fi. Number one, here we go. Joseph Gordon-Levitt quits the Sandman movie. This is from the Toronto Star. Kind of a sad thing for a lot of people. The Star has, the Star, not the Toronto Star, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt has dropped out of a movie adaptation of Neil Gaiman's Sandman. My wife just recently started reading the books, and she was kind of bummed about this. He said that he and the studio don't see eye to eye on the project. He'd been set to direct and star in the DC Comics title. In a message posted Saturday on Facebook, Gordon Levitt said he was pulling out after several years of development because New Line Cinema had a different idea about what makes Sandman special. Warner Brothers recently shifted the film to its subsidiary, New Line. Conjuring 2 screenwriter Eric Heisserer was also brought in. Gaiman, an executive producer in the film, tweeted that his respect for the actor-director is undiminished. The author added that he has little control over the film's production. So what do you guys feel about this? What's your views? What's your opinion on what happened there?
We'll start with Rob.
Well, not a huge Sandman fan, I hate to admit, but I mean, I think it's all boiling down to maybe money, possibly. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I know, is sort of a geek. And so he may have seen some things in there that he didn't like. And, possibly that led to him turning it down. I mean,
yeah. You know what? This sounds to me like a Ant-Man situation, honestly. Like, who was the director that was involved in that project for the longest time?
Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright. That was his baby. And then I think he saw the winds change a little bit. The studio got involved a little bit too much for his liking, and he quit that project. This sounds like a very similar situation. What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, I could see that that being the case. I know how passionate he was about it. And once it got shifted over, if there was too much studio-based shenanigans getting in the way of getting things done, I could see him most certainly walking. It's not like he needs the money, if you're passionate and really close to something and you really want to do the best you can for it and people start throwing weird roadblocks that weren't there before the shift, I could see being disillusioned and just walking from it.
This sounds like the opposite of the Ryan Reynolds and Deadpool situation. It sounds like Ryan Reynolds had a lot more control over that film. Not necessarily him, but the... he was heavily involved in Deadpool, right? Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah,
Yes.
He had a large part in that, yes.
Yep.
So, sounds like the opposite of what went on with that film, at least. Do you think they were trying to change it, make it more commercial? Make it more of a horror film when it didn't really need to be?
Maybe. Yeah, there's a lot of questions that I would have on that. Sandman is many things, and I got on board late. I think I got in at about issue 36, and then I collected all the way on until the end. And then I kind of went back and got some of the trade paperbacks and filled in some of the back issues, so I had a complete run. And it's many things, and it's epic storytelling, and there are many different ways you could take a Sandman movie. So
do you think they were trying to take too much of one angle and not broad enough, possibly?
Possibly. You know, it really kind of depends on where Joseph Gordon-Levitt's head was at. You know, at what point in Sandman's life did they want to do the first six issues of the Sandman story, where you get the introduction to the character, and you know, that is a really interesting story. So,
I guess we'll find out eventually. The information will leak out. Usually does.
Yeah, it usually does.
All right. You guys have any final thoughts before we move on? Rob?
No, like I say, I'm unfortunately not a huge fan, so I don't really have too much to say, I suppose.
All right. Well, let's get to know the guests a little bit. Welcome again to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Robert Rice, founder and creator of Big Old Box of Stuff. So I have a big question for Big Old Box of Stuff, Rob. What exactly is Big Old Box of Stuff?
Big Old Box Stuff is a geek nerd subscription service where you go to our website, bigoldboxofstuff.com, fill out a questionnaire, and we give you, you know, dozens of options to choose from. We ask that you choose a minimum of five. The more you choose, the better your box is going to be, of course. But then we take that questionnaire, put it in your own personal file, and we fill up a box filled with things that you are going to like. There's no themes. There's no monthly, you know, bad guys this month, video games this month, because let's just say you don't like video games. So if you fill out Walking Dead, Star Wars, Deadpool, Star Trek, you're going to get items from those genres and nothing else. Even the filler is going to be dedicated towards your likes.
So it's more of a customized, more of a, I don't know what the word I'm looking for. It's more...
pretty much a customized box, yeah.
Yeah.
It really is.
So what's the pricing like on Big Old Box of Stuff?
It's $35 per box, and that is shipped. You can go down to $30 a box if you choose our 3-month subscription plan. And once again, that is shipped, and we will send out a big old box of stuff personally built just for you, once a month. And we do not believe in recharging your credit card, so we do not automatically resubscribe you. You know, you have to go in and resubscribe again, because nothing upset me more than having to go, you know, find a way to cancel my subscription to some of the other guys, and it's sort of a hassle. So we like you to be in control of your money.
Okay, so I'm dying to know, how did you get into doing this? Like, were you like a nerd back in the day, like from the very beginning, and then your love of all things nerdy kind of got you into doing, you made a business out of it, or what happened exactly?
Pretty much, yes. I've grown up, you know, loving Batman, Spider-Man, Star Wars. Those are my big three. Horror movies, I guess, my big four. So last year, well, actually around Christmas time of 2014, a friend of mine at work introduced me to, and I'll go ahead and say it because they're not a bad company. I actually like them, Loot Crate. And I joined, and when I did get the box, it was definitely, I think, worth the money, but the mere fact was half the stuff I didn't really care for because it is a one-size-fits-all. Hmm. You know, everybody gets the same exact box. So I was just thinking, I said, well, you know, why can't we customize it? I've got, you know, and I have a huge collection of stuff, and I was actually getting set to do my yearly toy show and selling some of my stuff. And I just started really, really researching. And between me getting that information in December to putting myself a deadline of going live March 30th, I managed to do it. And opening day, I pulled in 48 customers on opening day.
Nice.
Just through my Facebook presence and some contests that I had going on about share this post and whatnot. And, every unboxing that you see is going to be completely different from everybody else's. And that's what makes it fun and exciting, is everyone is excited to see what everybody else gets because it's going to be different. If, like I say, I'm not talking bad about Loot Crate because I think they're great. I think for what you pay, you get a good service. But like I say, if you don't happen to like that genre, then, you know, you are kind of screwed because, you know, and that's what makes us different, is you may not necessarily like the Star Wars coffee mug, but guess what? You like Star Wars. So at least you've got, you see where I'm going with that? So it's, you know, at least you get the genres that you like and you, you know, that you can appreciate. So, that's pretty much how I got started.
If people are interested in getting a big old box of stuff, where can people go to find out more?
I go to bigoldboxofstuff.com, and that's O-L, drop the D, and go on there, cruise around the website. We've got a lot of cool, interesting things on there. And go to the questionnaire, fill out the questionnaire, and subscribe either for 1 month or 3 months, and, you know, get going on that. And
start your continue your collection or start your collection. Or if you're like Brad, build a new room for his collection.
I need a second floor to this house. No, and this, I was telling Rob before we started the show that this questionnaire is pretty extensive too. So there's a lot of different things and genres and possible interests that you could have that, you know, it's not necessarily limited to sci-fi based stuff. I mean, he's got an offer here for, you know, if you like coffee, do you like, you know, old school, you know, drinkware and, you know, brands on those types of pint glasses or whatever. And
the possibilities sounds like they're endless pretty much.
Yes, absolutely. Like I'm looking at this and I would select for various Pirates, Ninjas, DreamWorks, and Disney Pixar in that section alone. So, there's a lot of different things to choose from here. So,
Rob, please tell me there you have something Space 1999 related. Please tell me.
I do not. Oh. However, I have given out quite a few things from Space 1999 because not only do we have that questionnaire that you check off what you like, we have two sections that say give your top three favorite characters of all time, and then below that is give your top three interest, staying with the nerd theme, and you can pick it out. And there have been people who have put Space 1999, and I happen to have some trading cards, and I put them in their sleeves and everything, and give them to, you know, get them there, because there's not too much merchandise out there for that outside of comics and cards. I don't recall seeing any action figures or anything. I scour the internet anytime I have something rare like that and try to find stuff.
Well, cool. All right. Hey, I want to do what they call in the business a segue, okay? So Space 1999, very much grounded in realistic space exploration, because it was about a base on the moon, not too far into the future, with but then something fantastical happens. So what I'm getting at is our story number two in the news. Government turns to science fiction for space ideas. This is from Blaster.com. According to Gizmodo, the White House's Office of Science and Technology brought together scientists, engineers, artists, and policymakers as part of a workshop a few weeks ago to talk about what space colonization will look like and what it will mean for humanity. It was basically a big idea summit with an interesting mix of perspectives, imagining what a future in the stars might look like. So, here's what it was broken down into. The sections were exploring space. How will we leave the Earth and travel to other planets? Prospecting. How will we find and collect chemicals and minerals from asteroids and other planets? Manufacturing. How will we make the materials and manufacture the things we need to build a community on another planet? Bioengineering. How will we use biotechnology, including synthetic biology, to create food, fuel, and useful chemicals using engineering or engineered bacteria and plant life? And finally, the last category was world building. How will we not only survive but thrive in space, creating communities and maintaining our physical and mental health? Sounds like I would love to be at this type of conference. Sounds very, very interesting. Tom Kalil, the Deputy Director for Policy for the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. Wow, that's quite the moniker there, quite the title. He noted that there would be a value in bringing together artists and scientists to explore the challenge, along with the more analytical minds from the science and engineering side. He went on to posit that the modern approach to space exploration is at an interesting crossroads, and that humanity has to decide whether this is a challenge we want to embrace. He compared it to George Mallory's reason for climbing Mount Everest, because it was there, with artists hopefully being able to find new and different reasons why we should expand our reach to the stars. Kalil believes tapping science fiction thinkers can also help find societal effects that scientists might not consider when solely focused on the technology at the heart of the matter. So basically what they're trying to do is, sure, they got all these scientists and engineers and, you know, the technical part of what they want to possibly accomplish, but what about bringing other people in that may have a different perspective on things from a science fiction point of view, right? Like, for example, somebody who wrote a fanfic of Space 1999, maybe they have an idea on how we could build a better moon base from their crazy ideas, from their stories, right?
Sure.
Absolutely.
So what do you think, okay, being science fiction fans yourselves, what do you think, if you were able to go to this conference a few weeks ago, what would you have wanted to bring as an idea to the White House science people? Brad. Your love of science fiction, right? Some particular aspect of your love will probably have some kind of idea that you could use in a real world scenario, right? So can you think of just one thing? I know I kind of sprung that on you. Sorry.
Yeah. boy. Something I would like to see?
Yeah, I mean, you know, say you're invited to this conference, all right?
Yep.
Not necessarily because you're a writer of science fiction or you're a producer of science fiction. But
sure.
You're a fan of science fiction. You're like an uber fan, okay?
Okay.
And you're asked, what is the one thing of all your sci-fi fandom that would be a good idea to use in the real life of space exploration?
You know, I think we have some of the technology to make tricorders. And I think that, you know, having a unified device to be able to analyze things, you know, air quality or composition of a thing or something like that. I would like to see some focus put on that, because that would be very, very handy. If you're out exploring space, you want to have something very quick and easy to handle that you can analyze a thing that you haven't seen before, because you're going to get a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good example of taking something that was in science fiction and actually creating it for real in the real world. I mean, yep. Star Trek has been a great source for technology. Like, the cell phone is basically a communicator from the original series, like the original flip phone cell phones.
Yes.
And there's been a few other things that were taken from Star Trek and actually made into reality, I guess, more or less. So, Rob, can you think of anything that, being a sci-fi fan yourself, that you could tell Washington or the White House if you went to this conference? Like, something from your fandom that you could see as a real-world applications in the exploration of space?
I see definitely, you know, one of the things that we would need if we were going to colonize these planets is, you know, sustainability. And that means, possibly, you know, force fields. I know it sounds crazy, but force fields to sustain air and life and generate the air and everything that we need to survive. And then of course, you know, the ability to, produce, food. And somehow water. I mean, because you're going to have these things, obviously. So, you know, how do we make that happen exactly? And, you know, I'm sure they're already thinking that. The bioengineers are already, you know, hard at work at that. So that's the only thing I can really come up with that probably hasn't already been placed on the table.
Yeah, no, those are two things that are definitely something that we need to figure out before we can go out there, because... And force fields is a great example of that would be a multi-use thing, right? Because you could use force fields to push things out of your way. You could use force fields as maybe a barrier between human beings and a like a thicker area of radiation in space, right? Or some kind of radiation storm. I don't know if that's sure. A real thing, but I've heard that in science fiction.
Well, you know, what's interesting and kind of piggybacking onto what Rob's saying, they've done some work with sonics, with different, you know, with using sound waves to actually create small tractor beams.
Yeah.
This is like a real thing. So, you know, maybe that's something that we could look at to create, you know, a force field.
Mm-hmm. You know what? That's a good point. And going to his point about creating food and water, I've heard studies being done on the possibility, and I think they've actually brought a 3D printer to the International Space Station already. And I think I read somewhere, someplace, that there is one of those competitions to figure out how to use 3D printing to replicate food or things, biological things that we would need in space.
Sure. Well, they're doing some work on 3D printing organs. They just, excuse me, they just successfully printed, oh crap, I think it was a kidney or something like that.
Yeah, because you can there's many substances that you can use in 3D printers. It's not just like plastic or... Yeah. You can use biological matter.
Yep. So there's, you know, when you go into space, you're not necessarily going to be able to get a kidney transplant if you were, you know, accidentally, you know, exposed to radiation, or, you know, who knows what that you're going to find in space. So, you know, having the ability to manufacture replacement parts for people is not a bad idea. So
I was also thinking that something like a spacecraft that could be multi-useful, like it could be a spacecraft that would be for long journeys, but then maybe a piece of it could come off and go down to planets, kind of like a shuttlecraft, right? From sure. from Star Trek.
Why not create a transformer type spacecraft where, like you say, it shoots off to the moon or wherever you're going, and then it can transform into a lab.
Yeah, sure. And I kind of think of it kind of reminds me of Voltron in a way too, the Voltron TV show, and in many of the forms of that show, because it was they did different versions of that show. It was all based on actually different anime. Is it anime from Japan? Is that what they call
yeah.
it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. But I would love to have been a guest at this, at least a guest at this conference, just to hear what some of these, I mean, they must have had some great minds come there, not just the scientists and the engineers, but the great thinkers, you know, the artists that think of these crazy, you know, super crazy sci-fi ideas that could only take place, you know, far in the future, that maybe, you know, some engineer will get inspired by and, you know, come up with that, like maybe a form of whatever that thing is they came up with, you know.
Yep.
Just it would be really cool to hang out and take either just hang out or take part in something like that. Definitely. All right, let's move on to our third and final story in the news. But before we do that, we would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter, join our Facebook group, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. And you can either go to each of those platforms, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and do a search for Galactic Netcasts. Or the easiest way to go about doing it is go to our website, GNCasts. That's GNCasts.com. And at the very top, there's the social. There's what they call the social buttons or the icons for each of those services. You just click on those, and that will take you to where we're at on those social networks. So we'd appreciate you following us on Twitter, joining our Facebook group or page, and subscribing to our YouTube channel. YouTube is great too, because if you subscribe to our YouTube channel and you turn on notifications, you'll get notified whenever we're live. So if you like watching us record our podcast live, that's a cool way of finding out about it. So again, gncasts.com, and click on those social buttons and follow us wherever we go on the internet. Okay, the news, third and final story, Star Wars, J.J. Abrams admits Force Awakens Leia Chewbacca mistake. Now, I didn't notice this in the movie. I don't know if you guys noticed it. You guys have both seen Star Wars The Force Awakens. I know Brad has, but Rob, have you seen it?
There's a new Star Wars movie out.
Yeah, there's no way of... I don't think they did enough marketing, really.
No kidding.
So, the scene in question comes in during which the Resistance fighters return after their showdown with Kylo Ren. By the way, if you haven't seen it, this is kind of a spoiler. Just warning you, okay? So it comes in when the Resistance fighters returning with their or after their showdown with Kylo Ren, which saw the tragic death of Han Solo. Departing the ship, General Leia greets both Rey and Chewbacca, opting to console the former instead of giving her long, long-time Wookiee friend a hug. So basically, it looks like Leia was dissing Chewbacca, like Chewbacca had done something wrong, and they weren't friends anymore. But that's not the case. So talking to Slash Film, Abrams said, "My thinking at the time was that Chewbacca, despite the pain he was feeling, was focused on trying to save Finn and getting him taken care of. So I tried to have Chewbacca go off with him and focus on Rey. and then have Rey find Leia and Leia find Rey. The idea being that both of them, being strong with the Force, never having met, would know each other. That Leia would have been told, or would have been told about her beyond what we saw on screen, and Rey, of course, would have learned about Leia. And that reunion would be a meeting and a reunion all in one, and sort of a commiseration of their mutual loss. I can't stand reading quotes. It's my least favorite thing in the whole wide world. Some people are worse than others. Anyways, so reflecting on the moment even further, the filmmaker claims the problem may have been enhanced by the way he chose to block the particular shot. Had Chewbacca not been where he was, you probably wouldn't have thought of it. But because he was right there, passed by Leia, it felt almost like a slight, which was definitely not the intention. Did you guys notice that scene when that happened?
I remember seeing the scene, but I didn't remember thinking, oh, what's going on there? That didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah, I think a simple little, even a nod or just a hand on the shoulder or something would have made it a lot more poignant, but, yeah.
Or even, like you said, you know, the way it was blocked. You know, if you hadn't seen Chewie in the shot, nobody would have thought anything of it, right?
Oh, definitely. If he wasn't in the shot, sure. But
yeah,
you know, having him there, go faster, and you know, it's like, eh. Knowing that that's, you know, Han Solo's best friend, you know, I mean, for the sake of argument, put yourself in those shoes and say, you know, what if your best friend had just tragically died, and you know, the girlfriend of that just passed you by. I mean, you know, I know we're talking science fiction, but
yeah,
still, it was poor editing.
Yeah.
But it boiled down to, basically. Like you say, if he had not been in that shot, probably wouldn't have thought anything about it.
At least, you know, J.J. Abrams is a big enough person to admit that he was wrong about that. Like, and this is not the first time that he's come out and said, yeah, I messed up. I think he realizes that he messed up Star Trek Into Darkness. He said that a few times, that he didn't really approach that film the way it should have been. So at least he's honest with us. You know, he could have been like, you know, no, I meant it that way, and you know, I'm going to stick to my guns, that kind of thing. But that's not the case, which is cool. What is sure to appease fans in the news is the news that the upcoming untitled Han Solo spinoff prequel will also tell Chewie's origin story, and there's still no word on casting on that film.
Well, I know that they have Peter Mayhew is pretty much done with Chewbacca, I think, after these movies, and they said that they've already hired, I forget what his name is, but they've already hired another Chewbacca for later movies, just because Peter Mayhew's health was not allowing him to move forward with it. He'll still be a consultant, but he won't necessarily be wearing the all the yak fur.
Yeah, no, he's got to be kind of getting sick of it too. I know that he was only in the Chewie outfit in the sitting down scenes because he can't really walk anymore. Well, he has to walk with the aid of things, I guess.
Yep. Yeah.
By the way, Star Wars The Force Awakens will be available for digital download April 1st and DVD Blu-ray on the 5th of April, which seems like it's way, way too soon. It's like, it seems like the movie just came out, but that, no, it's already, what, we're almost mid-March? Crazy.
Yeah.
Are you guys excited to see this 10 Cloverfield Lane that is also J.J. Abrams?
It looks interesting. It looks, I will have to say, it does look very interesting for what you don't see.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too.
What I'm really interested is, what is the connection between this and the original Cloverfield movie? Like, is it taking place during the same time? Does it have anything? Does it have nothing to do with that one? Because that's also a possibility. They haven't said for sure that it is going on during that original film.
Yeah, they, you know, the main thing that they've said is it is not a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
It is a cousin, essentially. It takes place in the same universe,
oh, okay.
but it is a different story.
Oh, so that's for sure. I wasn't sure if that was for yep. sure. Okay. All right, cool. Well, that is your news. We would love your feedback on what we talked about tonight. You can email geeks@gncasts.com. That's geeks@gncasts.com. You can call our voicemail number, 805-328-3966. I kind of flip-flopped the feedback with I was going to talk about Patreon here, but I'll talk about Patreon after the big question. And you know what? We have a new intro for that, so here it is.
Dave?
Huh?
Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave, what's the question?
I'm about to tell you the question, okay? Are you guys ready for the big question?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, here it is. Which comic book superhero film adaptation do you think is the most anticipated and or will be the most popular in 2016? So I'm going to let Rob go ahead first because he is probably the most knowledgeable of us three in this department on the podcast panel this week. So I guess it's two questions really, because most anticipated could be different from what's most popular, right?
I believe so. Yes.
So what are your thoughts on this, sir?
Obviously, it boils down to the two heavy hitters, you know, Captain America: Civil War and Batman versus Superman: Dawn of Justice. I think they've separated themselves enough to their opening dates where both are going to be tremendously successful. It's just really going to boil down to repeat business, because I'm willing to bet they're both going to have relatively the same amount of box office draw. Give or take, but like I say, is this a movie that you're going to want to go see again and bring your friends to, or did it totally disappoint you and you're not going to go see it again? And you know, so like I say, it just depends on how successful they are. And I really, Dawn of Justice, the trailers and what everybody's been saying is really a 50-50 shot. I hate saying that. You know, no disrespecting the characters, because I love the characters and the stories and all that, just as much as I do Marvel. But I don't know. I'm a little uneasy about it. I really am. Not so much Civil War, just because I followed Civil War through the comics, and great storyline is definitely something that I believe can be very relatable to the average everyday person. I know it's fiction, but at the same time, you know, it could happen outside of obviously the superpowers and stuff aspect of it. But, and I'm wanting to say Batman and Superman is basically going to be kind of the same plot, more or less. And basically, it boils down to I would like to quote Jeff Goldblum and saying, just because you can doesn't mean you should. So, you know, given all these powers, you can just run around in a suit, nobody knows who you are, and destroy all this property and destroy all these lives and save two people and not be held accountable? Or does the good outweigh the bad and, you know, all that? So yeah, they're very relatable movies, I believe. And it's going to be very interesting to see who comes out on top.
Yeah, I think Civil War has a couple of things going for it that Batman versus Superman doesn't have. For example, Batman v Superman seems like it's longer. I heard that it's 2.5 hours long. It's a pretty lengthy film for repeat viewings, right? I mean, unless you're an uber fan, I don't know if you're going to sit through a film that long more than once or twice. Also, the Marvel film, it's a known property, right? It's like we've seen all these characters, or most of these characters, before. So we kind of know, we're familiar with them. We know basically how it's going to go. So I think Civil War has the upper hand, although Batman versus Superman is first out of the gate. And, you know, if it gets good buzz when it opens, it may turn out to be a bigger draw than Captain America Civil War, just because maybe also, you know, maybe people are tired of Marvel. Maybe it's DC's time to shine. Who knows? Maybe it's going to be an awesome, you know, Batman versus Superman could be this epic, you know, artsy film, and we don't even realize it. You know, I've heard rumor that it's a lot more complicated and on more levels than like a typical Marvel film is. Brad?
You know, to me, I think that Civil War is going to do great things, but I think that Suicide Squad is going to catch people by surprise.
Oh, yeah. That's the outlier.
Yeah. I'm just looking at a quick list here for the films for 2016 that we're going to get. We've talked about Batman v Superman, Captain America Civil War, Deadpool, but X-Men Apocalypse,
mm-hmm.
Suicide Squad, and Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange, too. Yeah. People love the Cumberbatch.
My little girl is in love with Cumberbatch. Yes.
And, you know, I think he's the great guy for the role. And I wanted to see a Doctor Strange movie. And I think that's great that we're finally going to get it. That said, I don't think that there's going to be, I don't think it's going to be a huge film. I think it's going to do like Thor numbers, maybe a little higher than Thor numbers. That said, Thor is probably one of my favorite Marvel Universe films,
mm-hmm.
the first Thor film. I'm nervous about X-Men Apocalypse, and I'm nervous about Batman v Superman. So I think the name recognition is going to be there for both of them, but I think with how well Captain America did with the last film, I think that Civil War is probably going to blow up big time.
Okay, so that's you're calling it Civil War.
Yep.
All right. Plus it's the Russo brothers, and they that second Captain America film was pretty good.
They know their stuff.
Yeah.
I will say you do have a good point about the Suicide Squad. I'll tell you, if they could turn that into another Guardians of the Galaxy, it has every opportunity to do so. I mean, it has that dark, it could have that dark humor like Guardians did. And let me tell you, Guardians is one of my all-time favorites just because it was so fun to watch. It wasn't a single boring moment in the movie.
No, absolutely. And I think that based on what we've seen on the trailer, I'm kind of getting the feeling that might be the case.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, for the Marvel movies, they always try to take the comic book genre and make a certain type of film out of it, right? Like Guardians of the Galaxy was a space opera. Ant-Man was a heist movie. The last Captain America movie would be considered... I had the word there for a second. I can't think of it now again. But how do you think they're going to label Captain America Civil War? Is it going to be like a Cold War West versus – or America versus the Soviet Union kind of film? Or how do you think they're going to – what label do you think they'll put on it?
Well, it's very much Civil War because, I mean, it's two great groups of heroes that everybody knows, loves, and respect, and all of a sudden they have odds and they're fighting each other, and you can very well see each of their points of view. So it's hard to pick a side. I mean, it kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
Parts of you want to, you know, say that Cap's doing the right thing, and part of you wants to say Iron Man's doing the right thing. It's just the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few type of situation also. Because I read the original books, and they were just phenomenal, and they left me with that feeling of, well, you know, both sides are kind of right. It's how do you find that middle ground?
Mm-hmm. All right. So there you go. That's our big question. We would love going back to feedback. See, this is why I had the feedback after the big question. Damn it, Dave. Feedback, we would love to get your answers on this. What do you think is the most anticipated, or what do you think is going to be the most popular of the superhero film adaptations in 2016? Geeks at gncasts.com, geeks@gncasts.com. Or you can also put a comment in the blog where this podcast will lie eventually on our website at gncasts.com. I did also want to mention our Patreon campaign, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. If you like what we do and want to support us, it is a great way to do that, very inexpensively too. Only $1 a month, that is the minimum we ask of you. $1 a month, we thank you for your support. If you do more than that, if you hit the $3 a month level, you'll get a newsletter once a month with extra stories about what we talk about on our podcasts, all of our podcasts on the Galactic Netcast Network. $5 a month will get you an extra episode of all of our podcasts. And there's also a $20 a month, which you'll have to go to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts and see what that one's all about. It's a secret. So what we're doing is we're raising money to basically cover costs of basic things that we need to pay for, like web hosting and audio hosting, you know, stuff that keeps the lights on, operational costs. We're not trying to make $1 billion off this, or $1 million, or even thousands of dollars, just enough to help us pay for things that we got to pay for. So again, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Oh, I can't wait to play this. This is my favorite one. Here it is.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
I.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
N.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
G.
It's called ING or ING. Watching, reading, listening, playing, etc. These are basically our recommendations for the week. And my recommendation, and they're all basically science, sci-fi related. The new Captain America Civil War trailer dropped today, and it features our first look at Spider-Man and the MCU. Did you guys both see it yet?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So your thoughts, not just on the Spider-Man appearance, but on the other stuff, because it really explains the movie a lot better, or a lot more than the previous trailers did.
I believe it's definitely building up to the expectations are going to be met. It's it looks tremendous. They're stealing actual images from the comic book where Iron Man has Rhodey in his arms in the field. That's an exact picture from the comics.
And, oh, I didn't know that.
They like to do that every now and again. It's awesome.
Huh. I didn't know that. That's cool. How about that scene on the what is it? A runway? I think it's a runway where the two groups are running at each other. Is that from the comic book as well?
I'm wanting to say it is, and it's like a double splash page where they have the two groups coming together. So they do that through quite a few different movies. They try to salt in, you know, comic images so that the fanboys can be like, oh, there's, you know, so just like salting in Stan Lee somewhere. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes on this.
Yeah, that's always the game, is watching for Stan Lee. I loved his I liked the he was the bartender in Ant-Man. That was great.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Spider-Man's first appearance, he actually shows up at the very, very end of the trailer. In fact, it goes, you almost think it's done, but then they come back to the action and they show what's the line that Iron Man is like, you know,
hey, Underoos.
Yeah, Underoos, right. Yes.
Right. And he sounds like Spider-Man should. He sounds like a kid.
Yeah.
Well, Tom Holland is a kid, though. He's like, you know, 15 or something like that, right?
That's just so perfect because he's never really been, I mean, you know, the previous ones, I mean, they seem like they're in their 20s, and they seem like that. But Peter Parker, I mean, he was still in high school when he was bitten. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure they might be going where he's a little bit older, but still, it's very promising. Very great.
What's your thoughts on the costume, guys? The eyes, particularly. A lot of talk about the expressive eyes. That's a first for Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I've seen some people like, what's going on with the eyes? And it's like, if you go with, they try so much in the MCU movies to try to get some kind of feel in the film, and I think we're going to get some kind of explanation on why the eyes are as expressive as they are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you look at in the comics, they were doing that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's kind of a tip of the hat to the comics, but I think we're going to see some kind of MCU explanation as to why that's happening.
Do you think that's all animated? Do you think that's computer generated?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. What was it? What else was there? One of the first comments I saw was somebody said his outfit or his costume looked too kind of cheap looking, like it didn't look.
You know, that was always my issue with the previous Spider-Man films. If you're a high school student, how much money are you actually going to have to make and remake costumes as they are destroyed? I mean, he's not rolling in cash. Mm-hmm. Aunt May doesn't have a whole lot of cash. So, you know, I kind of appreciate that. That feels right.
Yeah.
It looks like it jumped right out of the comic book page, which is nice and refreshing too. So hopefully it is portrayed well throughout the whole film. Or the brief part that he's going to be in it.
So, now, do you think that suit that he's wearing in that scene, do you think that's his suit or the one that supposedly Tony Stark gives him or makes for him?
No, because Tony Stark's is the gold Iron Man and the red Iron Man colors.
Yep.
It's completely different. It's you'll know it when you see it.
Okay.
Yeah, with...
even if you don't know it, you're like, that's Stark armor colors.
Yeah, and it comes with extra limbs as well. So
okay, well maybe I don't know if they haven't said if they're doing the Iron Spider costume exactly the way it was in the comic.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see. We'll have to find out when the movie drops. All right, that's my ing. Brad, do you have an ing?
Yeah, I'm collecting.
When are you not collecting?
Well, yeah, I don't play the lottery. I don't buy lottery tickets at all. But because I'm a Funko Pop, you know, addict, as we've seen in previous episodes, they do, Funko does mystery boxes from time to time. And a mystery box is they have a kind of a theme or a specific type of character, and the boxes actually come shrink wrapped, and you don't get the normal see-through window to see what's inside the box. So there's actually a box within the box that holds the character. So there's no people popping things open to see what's what and if they want to buy that one because there's a special limited edition figure in the Funko Pop collection. And this particular one is the Deadpool Funko Pop mystery. And there were three characters that you could get. You could get the blue Fool Killer, you could get the green Solo, and the mystery figure, as I was told, was purple. And I decided I was going to pick up two and see how things went. So I came back and I opened the first box, and lo and behold, I got the mythic purple, and it's the Terror Deadpool. So this was the mystery box Deadpool for the Hot Topic. Yes, I do shop at Hot Topic.
Well, wait a second. You're not a 15-year-old girl. That's crazy talk.
Not, but I do have a young son, so that's how I justify it.
Okay.
And by young, I mean he's in eighth grade. So.
Okay.
But yes, so I ended up, Deadpool was never my favorite comic book character. I want to lay that out there for you. But after seeing this movie, I really have a better appreciation and understanding of the character. So I thought I would give this a whirl, and by God, if I didn't get one of the rares. So there you go. And the other box, I wasn't lucky to get two purples. That would have felt kind of greedy. I got the blue Fool Killer. It was my other box. And I ended up, I work for a radio station group, and we ended up doing an impromptu unboxing video for the radio station's website.
That's great.
Yeah.
Those are nice.
So, yeah, that is my ing, collecting limited edition Deadpools.
Yeah, I've got a few good ones from Hot Topic, actually. I don't mind going in there just because, I mean, it is a collectible place now. I mean,
yeah.
Just for, you know, the kid. Well, I mean, it is, but, you know, if you're a collector, it's a great place to go because they do have exclusives. So.
Yep. Absolutely. So, Rob, do you have an ing?
What's that again?
Do you have an ing? What are you watching, reading, listening, playing to anything that is sci-fi related?
Not necessarily sci-fi, I guess. I guess the thing that I watch religiously pretty much is Walking Dead. I'm a deadhead, so...
Gotcha. Yep.
Yeah, I'm a slave to it. It's the show you're forced to watch. So, is what I like. Sometimes it just gets redundant, but at the same time, you're glued to that set to see if Glenn's going to bite it this episode or what. So that, and I've been watching Better Call Saul because we're huge Breaking Bad fans. And, I've been trying my best to watch Daredevil because I'm so excited for John Berthold's Punisher coming out, but I have to watch the first season completely before I devote, you know, more time to it and everything. But, you know, with this business, it's hard to sit down and watch, you know, binge watch like I used to, you know, a year ago.
Yeah, that's the kicker. Once you start something, and especially once it takes off, it takes a life of its own, and it takes over your own in some cases. So,
yes.
Yeah. No, you know, getting back to Walking Dead, you know, that was, even in the comic, that was, you couldn't like somebody too much. Because after, like, you know, once you got to issue 25, you're like, okay, anybody here can die at any time. And it always, you know, if it was a character you liked and they died, it just ripped your heart out. And it's going to be interesting to see once they reveal and start the Negan story, how that's all going to play out. Because that's going to be brutal. It's going to be so brutal and ugly and such an interesting exploration. You know, that's the thing that's always really appealed to me about Walking Dead. And that is, you know, the zombies they're a set piece. They're a plot device. It's not about the zombies. It's about how humans would interact and try to survive and try to get along and how would that all play out. And it's just, in some cases, it's really interesting, and in some cases, it's really freaking disturbing to what happens. And especially once we get into the Negan story, it's really going to get ugly. Mm-hmm. Like it hasn't been already, but it's going to get uglier.
Exactly. I saw something on the internet one time. It showed like Black Friday crowds and people fighting over TVs. And there was a blurb that said something like, imagine if it were food. They were fighting, or something, you know, or life, or actual life or death stuff. Imagine, you know, how escalated they can get.
Sure, absolutely.
All right, I'm back. Sorry, guys.
No worries. We were talking about Rob's ings.
Oh, what are Rob's ings?
Walking Dead.
Yes.
Oh, I love the I am looking forward to actually Fear the Walking Dead coming back because it's going to be coming on right after The Walking Dead. And earlier in the year and more episodes, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'm interested to find out what Rob's thoughts were on Fear the Walking Dead.
Well, I'd love to tell you, but unfortunately, I haven't gotten into Fear the Walking
Dead. Oh, okay, okay.
Sorry.
No, and that's fine. It's one of those things where it's not critical to watch. It's not going to, you know, it's just that kind of peek into what happened during the time that Rick was in the coma.
Yeah.
And in another part of the country, and watching, you know, still it's not so much about the zombies. It's about, in the beginning, it's how it starts to, we don't know how it exactly happened, but we know it happened, and how the government, how people are trying to deal with this sudden and rapid change. And by the end of that, I was just like, oh my God. It's just, it's worth a watch for sure when you get a chance.
And the different aesthetic too. It's that whole West Coast look is crazy. just watching the whole of Los Angeles get darker and darker, like the lights going out. It's creepy. It's very creepy. Yeah. All right. Are we satisfied with our ings? Can we move on?
Sure.
I think so.
All right. You were done talking about The Walking Dead, right, Rob?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I wasn't sure. I wasn't here, so
no,
I'm sorry.
Good.
All right. So we got a little feedback. If you want to give us feedback, by the way, geeks@gncasts.com is the email address. You can also call our voicemail number or text us at 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. And both our feedbacks come from YouTube comments, and astonishing, they're positive YouTube comments, which are...
Yay!
Yeah, we must be living in an alternate universe where comments on YouTube are good. So the first one comes from Paolo Marini. He said, Brad is like the Wikipedia in these episodes, where everybody asks him to remember this or that title, this or that actor, and comparing versions, universes, and series of many that exist. The show must be proud of you. Of course we're proud of Brad.
I'm something.
I always just feel like Brad is the smartest person in the room, which is why I always go to him, refer to him for clarification or answers.
I must have you completely snowed, dude.
I don't know. You just give off that vibe.
Yeah, I'm not even wearing my glasses.
Yeah.
So.
Where's your pince-nez? Are they...
We moved things around in the nerditorium here, and I haven't clue one where it is right now.
Yeah, I used to break those out all the time.
Yep.
All right. Okay, we also have a comment from Alicia Brenner. She's actually a former guest of ours on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. She won her spot because of, what was it, Patreon, right? It was the Andy Weir episode?
Yes, it was the Andy Weir episode.
Yeah. And she said, still loving the podcast and glad to see how well comics are doing in pop culture these days. But it's starting to feel a bit like the comic book Geeks Club in here. Maybe this was a bad episode to bring this to read this with Rob being on here and all.
Yeah, maybe.
We sometimes we get a little carried away, but you know the thing is, there's not a whole lot of other sci-fi stuff sometimes. Sometimes comic book stuff dominates everything else. So it's really hard not to come up with mostly comic book stories. She continues, yay for the Doctor Who releases. For those of us outside the U.S., it will make it easier for these episodes, too, as Brad put it about the Twilight Zone radio reboot, fall to the back of the internet. I totally agree with Corey about how ridiculous this region coding 100 different pay channels are, especially for those of us whom they're not even available. They make us feel like we have no choice but to loot the internet. Lori? L-O-R-R-Y? What does that mean? Brad?
I'm trying to find... we're in... the internet. Blah, blah, blah. A lorry is... It's a UK British term for like a truck.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, she lives in Holland, I think.
So. Yeah. Well, you know how I'll say, well, you have to see if it falls off the back of the internet. That's kind of what she's saying. It's, you know, if it falls off the back of the internet truck.
Okay.
Is essentially what she's saying there.
Okay. And then she goes on by saying, and they're getting us into bad habits for when there are more viable content distribution models in place. I agree.
Yep.
Also agreeing with Corey again about said TZ reboot and why not new stories. Maybe they realize they can't compete with Black Mirror on fresh modern storytelling and are going through the retro angle, hence radio, instead. Hope that's not it, because I read some seriously good dark sci-fi fantasy storytelling at least once a week. The truth is, stories are out there. Very nice, Lisa. Thank you very much. And again, like I said, leave us feedback. Make a comment on our YouTube videos, youtube.com/user/GalacticNetcast. Again, but we have that link on our front page of our website too, gncasts.com. Click on that and you'll find our YouTube channel there. You can subscribe to this podcast via iTunes. And if you like what you hear, please give us a 5-star rating and write a review. We're also on Stitcher Smart Radio. You can leave a comment on this episode there as well. All subscription options and links can be found under the subscribe tab at gncasts.com. All right, Robert Rice, thanks again for being our guest this week on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Tell us again about Big Old Box. I mean, Big Old Box of Stuff.
Thank you very much. It's a Big Old Box of Stuff. Go to the site, go to the questionnaire, fill out the questionnaire, and subscribe to 1 month or 3 months, and we'll pack you up a bag that or a box that is built specifically to your tastes.
Nice. Do you guys have presence on social media like Facebook and Twitter and stuff?
We have a huge Facebook following. Nice community there. Folks are just as friendly as they can be. We have Pinterest and we have Twitter also, and you can connect to those through our website as well.
Are people unboxing their boxes and posting videos up on your Facebook page?
Yes, they are, and also on YouTube. On YouTube, I probably have about, I'm wanting to say we have over 200 videos on YouTube of unboxings. And like I say, once again, every one of those videos is different because everybody gets different stuff. They may receive the same magnet, but, you know, it's all going to be different items in their box.
Yeah, different varieties of them, yeah. You know, there's people out there that actually love watching unboxing videos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's why Big Old Box caught on, is because, like I said, with some of the other brands, you know, you see one, you pretty much see them all except for the smart aleck comments or whatever that the unboxer, you know, says or whatever. But you're seeing the same product, you know, what's coming next, where with Big Old Box of Stuff, you don't know what they're going to pull out next because everything is different. There's no spoilers, as it were. That's why they're fun to watch.
I'm going to have to go and watch a few right after this. All right, you've been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. I'm Dave Nelson on behalf of Brad, Gregor, Corey, Matt.
Bye, Dad.
Anessa, JF, and Robert. I was quick, wasn't I, Brad?
Yeah, you were. You were right on that.
We'll talk to you guys next time. Bye, Rob.
Thank you.
Bye. It's nice meeting you.
Good to meet you.
You have been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. For more about this show and others, go to gncasts.com. That's gncasts.com.